It's time for the VolQuest Mailbag Podcast, answering your questions from the General's Quarters every week, right here on VolQuest.
Hey, good Thursday morning, everybody. Welcome to the VolQuest Mailbag Podcast, presented as always by our friends over at Exterior Home Solutions. They've been local and trusted since 1999 for roofing, siding, garage, windows, whatever the case may be. You can contact Exterior Home Solutions today for a free estimate, dial 865-524-5888, or you can visit online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. I'm Eric Kane, alongside Grant Ramey, Brent Hubbs, and Austin Price. A lot of questions to get into. We'll start with Port City Vol. Did Heupel limit the playbook to help Nico pick up the offense or to account for struggles in pass protection? Are there any particular changes you would like to see in the play calling next season?
Yeah, I don't know about limiting the playbook. I mean, they had pass protection issues, but they've given up a good number of sacks every year that they've been here. I think it's more about what's your counter to how defenses are playing you, because I do think defenses are playing you differently now than they did in 21 and 22. I'd like to see some more motions and some different things like that in this offense moving forward. But I mean, I don't know that they were hamstrung to the point that they couldn't run things, you know, offensively because of where they were with their quarterback, who's year two in the system, and, you know, a couple of veteran receivers that they were playing to. So I think it was more about how do you counter what defenses are doing to you than it is your playbook was scaled back because of what your talent level was, Grant, or your mental capacity was at that point in the season.
Yeah, I like the part of the question that talks about the pass protection, and I think also wide receivers. And I mean, it's not just all the attention goes to Nico, obviously, because you're the quarterback and that's the game, but it was a lot of stuff around him, I think, too, that limited as much as, if not more than, just the quarterback.
Crayon's got a couple. What is your college pet peeve? Many things going on in this era of college athletics. What is something that just irks you the most? Mine's unlimited transfers.
Mine is the person who's exhausted every ounce of eligibility announcing they are declaring for the NFL draft. Of course you're declaring for the NFL draft. You can't come back.
That's a great – everybody's doing it. Everybody's doing it, too. That's a great one.
I get it. Everybody does it. You know, I just think
– but it's stupid, yes.
Yeah.
It's very stupid.
I think you can do the, hey, thanks, I had a great time, I love everything about it, without saying, I'm now declaring for the NFL draft. Just say, you know, see you guys at pro day.
And again, we'll continue to remind everybody, the linebacker of Washington that said, I'm now declaring for the workforce, I need a job, is the MVP of the offseason because he's the only one that thinks it's hilarious and – gets the irony there. So
here's mine, recency bias, treating the college football playoff like it's the NCAA tournament. And if there's not insane games in the first round across the board, then it's a failure. I mean, when you have 12 teams, there's going to be some teams in there that aren't that great and aren't national championship contending teams, just like the NCAA tournament. There's a lot of 30-point blowouts in the NCAA tournament. I mean, look at NFL wildcard weekend. How many good games were there across the board there in those wild card games? One. So it's not going to be the NCAA tournament. It's two very different sports, two very different ways that games are played, styles and all that stuff. There's going to be some bad games. Just deal with it. And it beats the alternative. At least it's not, you know, Indiana and whoever in the Citrus Bowl. They're playing for something. It's on campus games. It's fun to watch, even if there's some blowouts mixed in there, or all blowouts, I guess.
For me, I think it's unlimited transfers, you know, being able to move whenever you want to all the time is challenging. I think officiating is maddening too. So just the inconsistencies of it night in and night out, you know, are things that are pet peeves. I don't know how you fix any of it, but, you know, those would be some pet peeves that that I would have.
I think faking injuries would be up there for a lot of people in football for sure. If you could go back to one game and just watch it without having to cover it or working it, which game would that be?
2022 Alabama, just because of how up and down it was, crazy it was, the not only the scoring and how the points were scored, the explosive plays, but the momentum changes in the game, Tennessee getting out to a huge lead, Alabama coming back, Tennessee that turnover, what was it, a fumble, miscommunication, I can't remember how it happened, Nico.
And scoop and score, man. I mean, right, that was fourth in quarter, it, and it's like, oh,
right.
No.
Right, in an instant, and it just felt like, I don't know, just to be in the stadium, to be outside the press box, actually in the crowd, and to watch all that stuff happen would be crazy.
After the last 15 years, when in 2022, when they picked the ball off and started running it back, how many people were sitting there going, again.
Here we go again.
And then
it happened twice in that. It happened twice in that game. You had the interception to get called back, and then you had the scoop and score. Both those moments were like, here they go. I mean, you're never going to win.
But when they're running back the pick, though, you know the game is over at that point if they don't get the penalty. Whereas, like, the scoop and score, there were still several minutes on the clock.
But again, it was like, here they go. Yeah. I mean, you're there. We've seen this movie. They're not going to be able to finish it off, you know, and here it is. So, yeah, I mean, to me, that's the most recent one that jumps out immediately that you would say, yeah, that's where I'd like to be. I mean, I'm sure you could go back and go through some games for me in 98 and everything, but for – recency, I mean, that game and what it meant and how back and forth it was, 22 was just a wild 4.5 hours of football or whatever it turned out to be.
The game that didn't go Tennessee's way that was equally as entertaining was 2016 A&M. Just the back and forth and the range of emotions with, you know, Malik running the guy down and punching the ball out, and then Butch failing to go for two, and, you know, just all the plays by Alvin and Dobbs. That's one that you just forget about because the game didn't end up Tennessee's way, but equally as entertaining.
What's one everyday task that you wish would hit the transfer portal? Crayon says his would be laundry. Mine would be folding and putting up the laundry, not physically doing the laundry, or I guess maybe that's all one thing. I hate folding and putting up the laundry.
I love towels. I love my clothes. I don't mind my wife's clothes. I hate a hodgepodge of just all kinds of just nonsense when she's like, hey, can you get the clothes out of the dryer and fold them? And I'm like, is it a hodgepodge? And she just says nothing. I'm like, great. You know, or kids' clothes, because they're smaller and you got to, like, when you're trying to, like, pull the arm sleeve back out, you know, those are little things for me.
Grant, what you got?
Sink full of dishes. Hate it. The older I get, the more OCD I get about it. And I don't know what I hate more. Seeing the sink, seeing a sink full of dishes, actually doing something about the sink full of dishes, or I don't know. I would skip both of those, skip past it. The older I get, the more OCD I get about it, and drives me crazy.
Sounds like all three of y'all need to hire a maid.
Yeah.
I don't have any of that. So
you
already got the maid.
Yeah. It's clean. It's cleaning the kitchen, laundry. I mean, it's just, and Eric, get ready. If you think laundry's bad now, you haven't seen what laundry's getting ready to look like in your life. So, when you're like, okay, another load of onesies, another load of little kids' clothes, like, oh my geez,
burp bib,
crap all over it. Yeah,
because here's the thing: with little kids' clothes, you can put like 250 items in the washer. So it's like when they get older, and you're like the wintertime, you're washing sweatshirts. A full load in the washer doesn't have that many items of clothes in it. But when your kids in toddler clothes, there's 412 pieces of clothing in the wash machine that you end up getting in the dryer that you end up having to fold.
How about trying to change the bag on the diaper genie and there's 14 trap doors and you got to figure out how to get it out. And the smell coming out of that thing would...
Eric's going to have so much fun.
Peel the paint off the walls.
Huge pet peeve, and my wife is the world's worst at putting the
tread lightly.
No. Putting the wrinkle or the dryer sheet in. And all of a sudden I get my clothes. She always does it on my clothes. I get my polos out and there's like clink, 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 clink. And it's like, it's the worst feeling ever. So yes, that is a huge.
I can see that, Brent. I can see that being a huge fight in the Price household for sure.
Oh, I can totally see it. I don't use, fabric softener or dryer sheets when I wash. We wash like we're in the military barracks, man. You just wash your clothes, get them done, and get going.
Good stuff. Good stuff.
Yeah, that's what everybody wants to hear this morning on the Mailbag Podcast.
They like it when he goes off the rails a little bit. Crayon's always got great questions.
Let it be said, I'm not throwing my wife under the bus here. Yeah, I don't like doing dishes myself. I don't like it. I hate it.
My wife does most everything, okay?
Oh, yeah. Now, don't backtrack now.
She knows. I'll call a spade a spade. As far as, like, the stuff around the house, she dominates me and all that stuff. But that's the one thing I'm like, gosh, why does it always happen on my clothes? Like, you know, I throw your stuff in the dryer and I go in there and I'm like, I pull out one item and, like, six items come with it because they're all stuck together.
All right, ATL VFL. Does Christian Gass start the spring as an inside linebacker or an edge? Is Perlotti heavy enough to play inside? AP, I think that's interesting because you didn't sign a true Leo. Like Gats would be that Leo, but Tennessee might need him to play linebacker now. He can be in the rotation at linebacker next year where he'd be the fourth option, probably a Leo. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that it's certainly possible that, you know, he'll play some of both. I think a lot of it depends on, like, you know, what Kurt Schmidt and them do weight-wise with him over the next couple of months. I mean, he shows up in March and he's put on some weight. You know, I think that could change some things. As for Perlotti, I think he's probably an outside guy, just off size.
Who do you think is going to be the goal line back next year now that Samson is gone? Tennessee doesn't really have a goal line back, Brent. It's just whoever's in the game, right?
No, I mean, Samson benefited from 2 years ago when they got down there and a bunch of those guys, Jalen Wright and those guys were tapping
the vulture.
Out. He was like, I'll come in and take that. I mean, so no, I don't think there's a goal line back. They've got to be better in the red zone, you know, running the football, regardless of who the back is. But I don't know that they're going to go in and have a specialty goal line tailback or anything like that. I think you'll continue to see them try to do some stuff with a jumbo package, but I think they feel comfortable in that being, you know, Peyton Lewis is the tailback back there, Deshaun Bishop as the back there. I don't think they're going to have a quote short yardage or specialty back.
Doolittle Vol, one underutilized aspect of the offense has been thrown to the running backs. Do you think that is something that Heupel would consider using more often? And do we have any running backs on the roster that could excel in the pass catching role? You know, we watch the college football playoffs, and there's running backs that catch the football. You watch the wild card weekend, there are running backs that catch the football all the time. A check down to a running back is not a bad deal ever. Now, for Tennessee, a lot of times those running backs are staying in there for max protect, and so that's a different story. But, Grant, I would love to see the running backs a little bit more involved in the passing game, even if it's a simple check down. I'm not talking wheel routes or anything like that, just a simple check down. That's football. That's not a bad thing, but Tennessee never does it.
I mean, who's been better at that in recent years than Alvin Kamara? And how many people compared Dylan Sampson to Alvin Kamara? And maybe I'm wrong, maybe I'm uninformed, but if it wasn't going to happen with Dylan Sampson, I mean, how many catches did Dylan have this season? I can't even tell.
Not very many.
If it's not going to happen with Dylan, it feels like, who's it going to happen with? When's it going to happen? If it hasn't happened by now, why is it going to change all of a sudden? I mean, I would love to see the change. I agree it's underutilized, and it could help them in a lot of different ways. But if we haven't seen it by now, it feels like, I don't know if we're ever going to see it.
What is the DN situation in terms of depth? Not Leo, the other side, and Grant. I think it's a really good case because you got Bailey coming back, you've got Wes Weathersby, and a couple young guys as well. I mean, I think the depth there's really, really good.
Joseph, well, is that right? Somebody did you mention Joseph?
I was talking about the strong side defense,
like the Tyler Barron spot.
I got you. Go ahead, Huber.
I think it's going to be interesting to see how much Weathersby, where's he at, and you're further removed from the hip. I think is going to be interesting. I mean, they've got some bodies there. I mean, certainly they're bringing back Don Bailey. He got experience there. Where's Jordan Ross, AP? Is he behind Joseph's, or do they play, you know, him on that side? You know, what does that look like? I mean, I think it's going to be kind of interesting to see what they mix and match with, given different situations. What's the first down mix look like versus a third down deal? You know, what does rabbits look like? Do they do some more tweaking on that? Because they do have some guys out there who have some young talent. Just what does that talent look like as they come through spring practice?
I mean, Weathersby's one that, you know, Rodney Garner was, I mean, he was talking up big time 2 years ago before the hip. And, you know, now you have the hip, you kind of get buried.
Jenkins kind of took a spot, yeah.
Right. I think they're expecting him to take a huge step. You know, what does Marion Dye look like? It will be interesting to kind of see how that position unfolds. But, I mean, I think Weathersby is the guy that you look to take the step to add to that particular position.
As a true strong side defensive end, I wonder if they don't play more combinations of Leos on the field at the same time, not just in, quote, the rabbits package. If they don't have what you would think is two Leos on the field more often, other than just third and long, obvious passing situations. Again, I don't know that, but I think that's going to be something that you keep an eye on as this defense starts to develop.
Blayton Case says, or he asks, who is one player on offense and defense who you believe who can make a big jump and turn heads in spring practice? Could be an incoming freshman or an existing player.
I mean, Mike Matthews is the obvious answer. I'll leave that for somebody else. I would think Peyton Lewis. I was impressed by him this season. I thought he looked like he was ready to handle his own and I don't know, impressed me in moments in some of those games. I can't remember which ones they were. Some SEC games where he ran with physicality, and I thought he was impressive defensively. I would go back to the conversation you guys just had. The defensive front, who's going to be that next guy that steps up and is really productive and kind of progresses next. And because it feels like they've had somebody new kind of every year or so that steps up and is more productive on that defensive front. The question is who's it going to be?
I'm gonna give you 2 second year guys that I'm going to be really interested to see their growth and development. And that's Spillman at linebacker. Healthy, what does he look like? Where does he factor in? Because they're really seem to be really high on him. And then I think Braylon Staley is kind of the guy nobody talks about in the receiver room right now. Now we'll see. They may bring in some transfers and different things, but I think Braylon Staley is a guy who has got some consistency to him. I think he's going to be a good player. And I think all the focus is going to be on what's Brazel in year two, what's Mike Matthews in year two. I'm very interested to see what Braylon Staley looks like in year two. I think he could be a really nice piece to the puzzle for Tennessee at the slot.
I like Hubbs too. I mean, Edwin is somebody that, you know, they have high hopes for and kind of got derailed with the injury late in the year and was able to come back for those last couple of games. But, you know, I mean, at that point, you're still kind of, you know, running behind, so to speak. And then I agree. Staley is someone no one talks about, just kind of a hard-nosed kid, puts his head down, goes to work, isn't flashy. Just interested to kind of see how he does.
Old coach says, in my humble opinion, with the game moving more to the perimeter space, Coach Banks should consider more dime to put more athletic players on the field, especially in third and more than five. It also gives you flexibility and pressure concepts, coverages, and still allows for run support and spying an athletic quarterback with an athlete. They did it some, not much. Dime, six defensive backs on the field. You can either run it with two LBs and four down linemen or three down linemen. Two LBs and three down linemen or four down linemen and one linebacker. Didn't see an awful lot of that. And, of course, you know, we've talked a lot about the schemes and in-game adjustments and all that. Do you think we could see even more of those moving forward, you know, dime and some quarter packages, Brent?
I mean, we'll see. I mean, listen, this was the best year Tim Banks has been – his defenses have been on third down. They were bad in two games. They didn't get off the field against Ohio State. They didn't get off the field against Georgia, which is what everybody's going to gravitate to. Was that simply because they were too slow on defense, or was that they were banking too much on the pass rush out of the front four that didn't get home? You know, I think those are things that you look at. I mean, I do think he has to look at his pressure package. Where's pressure coming from? How's he going to be more aggressive? He probably put too much hope and too much stock in that defensive front in a couple of those games. I know they blitzed more in the Georgia game than anybody realizes. But, I mean, yeah, I think you got to look at your pressure package. I don't know that there are not a lot of teams playing a bunch of six defensive back stuff. I think, Grant, when you're in third and long, do you go six defensive backs or do you kind of play that shell coverage and everybody lines up four across at the sticks and, you know, you keep the ball in front of you type deal? We saw Arizona State go full pressure package against Texas on fourth down, and they gave up a touchdown. So there, you know, there's feast and famine, and there's different ways to look at it. That's why Tim Banks, or you know, whoever the defensive coordinator is going to be, and I'm assuming it's Tim Banks, is making, you know, a lot of money and making critical decisions. I do think they have to be a little more exotic with some different looks, though, because I don't know that they're going to go in with the mindset that this is the best defensive line in the country, which they had a year ago.
I think it comes down to trust and personnel. Do you trust that sixth defensive back more Good than point. You trust whatever linebacker you're taking off the field to put that defensive back? And I think it just depends on, you know, the numbers in your secondary versus what you got at linebacker and how you balance that in any given situation.
I mean, regardless of what it is, when you're not getting home with four, you got to make a move.
Right.
And there was no moves made in games against Georgia, Ohio State, and some other
you
games.
You got to adjust. I agree.
Yeah, I mean, that's, again, that we talk about all the time. That's the most frustrating thing for me. Tennessee third down defense, number seven in the country, 30% this year. I want to say, don't quote me, but I want to say before the Georgia game, of course, Georgia was very late in the year. Tennessee was like 24%. So those two games knocked them down a little bit, but still 30%. Number seven in the country. That's a really, really good year. David Key fan, faking injuries continue to be a problem this season without any resolution. If you chair the committee to fix it, what would your plan be? Anybody?
Do you guys like the plan that was thrown out there that you got to stay out the whole series if you get hurt?
Unless
or use the timeout to come back in? You like that guy?
I like it. I'm surprised we didn't think of it before this because it makes too much sense almost. Because you don't want to lose a player for an entire possession. I mean, if they're legit hurt, then that's probably going to happen anyway. And if you find a way to abuse, if that does go into place where you lose that player for the rest of the series and you find a way to abuse that, then leave him out for the rest of the half or something. I don't know. But that's a good starting point, I think.
And it will be a lot easier to burn the timeout in the first half to get your player back out there than it will be in the second half.
Right.
But again, it goes back to how can you prove it, right? I mean, so we're talking about every single injury now, every single person that goes down, they got to miss the entire series?
Yep.
I mean, when this guy's just falling over, you know.
Well, I mean, you and I can tell when somebody's right, faking it, but right, you know, there's a lawyer up there that can fight against it, right? Like,
I think I think it's a good idea, but I think it's going to be difficult to enforce because of what you're talking about.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's what it's always been about.
My initial thought when I read it was like, okay, that's really not fair because you think about, and what if somebody gets something in their eye and they have to come out for a play, right? What if your center gets a finger out of place and he can't put it back in? He's got to go out there and pop his finger back. He's ready to come back in the next play.
You get the wind knocked out of you. Like,
yeah. Now, you could use the timeout to bring that guy back in. But here, as I thought about it further, this is what coaches have done to themselves because they've cheated this rule, you know, to fake injuries to slow down offenses. So would it be unfortunate to lose a guy in the second half because you're sitting there, you don't want to burn a timeout? Austin thinks this is really funny for whatever reason. But you think that you're burning a timeout when the reality is you put this rule into place because you cheated the system with faking injuries. So deal with it. It's kind of the more I look at it, I initially was like, nah, I think this is unfair. But when this is what coaches have done to the game.
Now, the problem is, I don't think you can have a gray area. I think it's just kind of black and white. But, like, exactly. Well, if you have two guys that collide on a play, all of a sudden you got two starters that have to come off the field or you use a timeout. You know what I mean? Like, they could just be something that's like they get shaken up because they collided trying to tackle a guy, but they're fine, right? But they got to, you know, the trainer comes out. I mean, you know, there are these instances where you're like, that part of it would be rough.
Maybe they can give each team an injury timeout or two per half. Just change the game of football, right? Yeah,
that's it. Let's put some more timeouts into play.
Bonus timeouts.
Bonus timeout.
If that rule did go into place, every coach in the country would immediately figure out which player can I afford to lose for the rest of the drive, which backup is best suited to go in the game. Okay, that player is going to go down every single time.
You're exactly right. I mean, what you're on your sideline, if you're sitting there and you're winded, you're going to run your corner on your backup corner, whatever, and then you're going to flop that guy to get a stop in play so you can make a rotation of all your defensive linemen or catch your breath, whatever. I mean, there'll be plenty of ways that people manipulate the system with it. So it's not going to completely fix it, but I don't think it'll pass because I think enough coaches are going to look at what Austin's talking about. Man, I'm going to lose two guys because they collided on a play over the middle. Like, that's not fair, blah, 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 blah. But clearly, something's going to have to be done with it.
My question is, how's that going to affect Tennessee in the PAT? Do you have to set up the next PAT? No kickoff? I mean, what's going on there, right? I mean,
all those backup offensive linemen can't play on the kickoff team now.
I mean,
what's Papa going to do?
I don't know, right? Is Kessling being offered a type of emeritus role title with a lot of old timers on campus seemingly getting that upon retirement?
No, I don't think so. I think Bob's ready to retire. I think he's ready to go hang out with his grandkids and move on. So, and I think he's going to do a bunch of charity work in town with things he's been a part of for a long time. I don't think he's just going to be hanging around campus to hang around campus as any kind of emeritus deal.
He's going to host the podcast when Eric goes on paternity leave and Eric's going to get Wally pipped.
Would be awesome. Actually, let's do that. Let's make it happen.
Come on down, Bob.
I mean, Eric's really taking maternity leave. What are we doing here?
Yeah, you know he is. I mean, like, come on.
Hey, Eric, long.
He's no Kim Caldwell.
You said Bob, come on down. If I said Rod Roddy, do you know who that is, Eric?
Yeah.
Who is it?
No, I don't.
Hey, it's the Price is Right, man. It's the guy with the wild jackets.
Come on down.
Right.
I only know Bob Barker.
He worked with Bob Barker. He was the guy who was calling the people to the front so they could bid.
I just know Bob Barker is synonymous with The Price is Right.
You know, only because you watch Happy Gilmore is the only reason you know that.
Or How I Met Your Mother. There's been a lot of carryover in that series as well, Barney's dad. All right, let's go to Volume Shooter. If Deion were to leave Colorado, we're clearly not going after Seton. Anyone else on the Buffs roster that Tennessee might be enticed by? What about Ohio State, Notre Dame? Any previous recruitments that could have guys circling back around the Knoxville? I know you guys obviously know names, but positions, if anybody were to jump in the portal.
Yeah, I mean, would there be a receiver they'd have interest in that, you know, has some eligibility left that's played? I mean, I'm not sure Deion's going to go anywhere. Like, I think this is just a lot of flirting to put his name out there and stuff. But, I mean, if he does, then, I mean, yeah, I think the first place you would look would be receiver because they got to have a body, you know. I mean, and then what, you know, what about other positions Tennessee may need help at? You know, I think they're at least, whether it's Colorado or not, I think there will be a one or two schools that lose their coach to the NFL or to late game retirement or whatever over the next month or two, just because that's been the norm the last several years. And when that happens, everybody's got to be really, you know, active to go, okay, hey, what do they have? You know, let's go after that guy. Because, I mean, 30 days, I mean, you're going to see some defections no matter what school it is.
All right, let's take a break here. We'll get a word from our friends over at Exterior Home Solutions, and we'll come back and answer the rest of your questions. All that and more right here on the VolQuest Mailbag Podcast.
Severe weather can strike at any time in East Tennessee, and Mother Nature can do severe damage to the first and most important line of defense that you and your family have against Mother Nature, and that is your roof. Whenever she strikes, make sure that you call the people that I call. Make sure you trust the people that I trust, and that's my friends at Exterior Home Solutions, because they're more than friends, they're truly family.
Phone number is 865-524-5888 or online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. Been local and trusted since 1999. East Tennessee's number one choice for roofing, siding, garage, windows, and so much more. That is Exterior Home Solutions. Are you ready to optimize your nutrition this year? Factor has chef-made gourmet meals that making eating well easy. They're dietitian approved, ready to heat and eat in 2 minutes so you can fuel up and feel great no matter what life is throwing your way. Factor arrives fresh and fully prepared, perfect for any activity, busy lifestyle. You can lose up to 8 pounds in 8 weeks with Factor's keto meals based on a randomized controlled clinical trial with Factor Keto. Results will vary depending on diet and exercise. With 40 options across 8 dietary preferences on the menu each week, it's easy to pick meals tailored to your goals. You can choose from the preferences like Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, or Keto. Factor can help you feel your best all day long with wholesome smoothies, breakfasts, grab-and-go snacks, and so many more add-ons. You can reach your goals this year with ingredients that you trust and the convenience that can't be beat. Eat smart with Factor. Get started at factormeals.com/VQ50 for 50% off with your first box plus free shipping. That's promo code VQ50 at factormeals.com/VQ50 for 50% off. One more time, promo code VQ50, factormeals.com/VQ50 for 50% off plus free shipping on your first box. All right, we'll jump back into it. Got a couple here from Athrun. General thoughts, you were just talking about wide receivers. What body types do you think Tennessee's after? Big and physical, smaller and shifty, straight line speed, et cetera. Well, what type of receiver is Tennessee looking for?
All. I mean, like, you know, I don't think they would turn down an outside guy if one was available. But I would also tell you that, you know, that they probably would be smart to take a slot. I mean, right now you got Braylon Staley and kind of Braylon Staley as far as guys that have been on campus. And so, you know, you don't know exactly what Joe Kim Dodson is yet. You don't know what you have in Amari Jefferson yet. So if you're going to look for receivers, I think you're kind of looking for all shapes and sizes because, you know, I don't think you're going to turn down a quality player.
Proven productive, regardless of what their body build is. Proven and productive.
Do you think they add another running back for depth purposes in case of an injury?
I think it's most likely after spring if they do, but yes, I mean, like, I certainly do think that the plan is to add another body because, I mean, can you really afford to go into the season with four tailbacks? I mean, you could, but, man, you're a couple of ankles away from being in a weird spot.
Was it 2023 that they had four tailbacks? Was that the Lynn J. Dixon experiment or was that 22?
That was 23.
was
yeah,
not
whatever year that was. They had four running backs, but you played a walk on some in 2021 there. So yeah,
was not expecting a Lynn J. Dixon.
Lynn J. only lasted shortly longer than Jonte Cook at Washington.
Interesting. This time last year, everybody's asking the same question about tailback. Well, in the spring about tailback, do you go get one or do you roll the dice?
Yep.
Because of the injuries that you had with Peyton Lewis and because where you were with Cam Seldon. Yes, you had a proven Dylan Sampson coming back who was more proven than Peyton Lewis was, but everybody was asking the same depth question, and they rolled the dice, and it worked out fine for them.
Yeah, they have five, though. This year they only have four.
So I know, but they didn't need to go to five. That's why Khalif Keith is no longer here. I mean, five was – I mean, they weren't going – you know, that direction. So I'm not saying they don't go get one. I'm just saying I think it's got to be somebody. I don't know that you just burn a spot to burn a spot or spend some money to spend some money. If you feel like Morris and you feel like you can play a little bit of a freshman. Because here's the thing with Sims. Now, we don't know this because Sampson was so good. But, I mean, he appeared to be a two-tailback-a-game kind of guy, not a three-tailback guy. I mean, somebody had to get hurt for the third one to come into the game. Whereas Jerry Mack was very comfortable playing three tailbacks. He liked rotating three. So we'll see what that looks like moving forward. I'm with you. I think they take a tailback, but I don't know. I'll be curious to see what they think about that position coming out of spring practice.
When you say Nico's got to take a step in the offseason, what are you typically referring to? Knowledge of the playbook, processing speed, deep throw accuracy, all the above. I know Hendon's jump will always be attributed to his quick processing speed of the year or from year one to year two.
Yeah. Hudson and I talked about this the other day. Like, I think it's really unfair that, like, everything, Tennessee's offense, while it's not 22, still was pretty good this past year. Like, I mean, like, on the whole, like, when you compare it to other offenses around the country, yardage-wise, all that. But everybody compares everything to 22, and they all compared Hendon to Nico or Nico to Hendon. And, like, that's, you know, I think that's rough because, I mean, like, Hendon – would Hendon have been what Nico was as a redshirt freshman? You know what I mean? Like, I mean, Nico – I mean, Hendon was 24 years old. So, yeah, I do think he's got to process it faster, Brent. I mean, like, that's there's no doubt about that because he's got to take the biggest step of anybody on this team if Tennessee's going to be back in the CFP conversation in 2025.
Yeah, Grant, I mean, I think leadership falls into that, you know, being vocal, all of those things we talked about on the podcast on Tuesday about, you know, just his need to be a leader because they don't have an alpha on the offensive side of the ball right now. And, I mean, you got to have a natural progression there. And the quarterback obviously always gets too much credit, too much blame and all those things. But there's got to be another step for them if they're going to be this explosive offense that they want to be. And it starts with him.
I think all of the above a little bit on the stuff that was listed in the question. But process speed, I mean, this offensive line, I don't know what they're going to look like in the fall. It's going to be overhauled, remade, all that stuff. He's going to have to process quickly. And maybe it's recency bias from watching Sam Darnold hold onto the ball Monday Night Football, that playoff game the other night. But you can't hold on to it forever. You got to make a decision to get rid of it, get out of the pocket, do something with it. So I would go process speed over all the other stuff listed there. But I think he could take jumps and all that stuff like Hubs was talking about.
Thirsty Turtle says, any comments by coaches about Mayshak being hesitant to shoot jumpers? He turns down a lot of open looks from three and the mid-range that he was shooting at the beginning of the season.
Not jumpers necessarily, but there was some talk Tuesday about they want him to be aggressive. If defenses are going to play off him, he's going to have angles to drive. He can have Felix Okpara ducking in and do stuff like that. I mean, he had three layups at Texas Saturday night. I think that's ideal. If the ball's in his hand, he can find a way to score it just to get those paint touches. He can also kick it out to shooters, which I think Jordan Ganey got a three off of one of his possessions in the second half at Texas. So, defenses are playing off him. They're adjusting. They want him to continue to be aggressive. But there's ways you can impact the game without shooting jump shots. There's ways you can obviously score without shooting jump shots, but you can also help your teammates, and I think that's what they're emphasizing.
CJS Vols, who of our graduating declaring players do you think will increase their draft stock the most during Senior Bowl, Combine, / Pro Day, the pre-draft process?
I'll go Omar Norman Lott.
I agree with that. I'm interested to see what does Peely do. I mean, like, again, he's not been able to stay healthy, you know, but what does he look – I mean, he, you know, I think he would test well and all that in that realm.
I think Dylan Sampson will test well and will be productive in all of that. It's just that so deep at that position, I don't know how much he can, quote, help his stock in terms of jumping rounds. But I do think he's a guy who will help himself the more people talk to him and the more he gets evaluated.
I think Thornton could too because he's just such a straight line speed guy. If you run that 40, I think he's got a chance to put up something pretty good at his size. And I don't know how well he leaps, but I would imagine he'd be pretty good in that test too.
Yeah, I just wonder if there's a little bit of a hesitancy at that position because Jalin Hyatt's done nothing with the Giants coming out of this system. Cedric Tillman got hurt, was playing pretty well with Jameis Winston, got hurt, didn't play the back half of the season. Bayless Jones, highly productive here. It's not worked for him. He's on his third or fourth NFL team now. Does that hurt the stock in any way, shape, or form?
And his second position.
I like Dylan Sampson to rise a little bit because it just feels like his stock is so low. I mean, I think he was maybe 10th out of 10 running backs listed by Mel Kiper a couple times, if he even made that list.
He did, 10.
I think he's way too productive. I think he's built for the NFL, the way the NFL's gone with running backs, to not be a productive NFL back.
Pine says, Brent has talked a lot about how much better the red zone offense was in 22 versus this past year. Do you remember or can you pull off PFF? How much Hooker ran inside the 20 that year? Could Nico running be more of an option? All right, let's hear it.
I've done research because I looked at this question and I thought it's a good question, but I need to look at some numbers. Anybody want to take a stab on how many rushing touchdowns Hendon Hooker had in 2022?
Five. Well, you are no, 2022 was three. I'm sorry, three.
No, it was five. Very, very good.
One of those.
Anybody want to guess how many Nico had in 24?
Three.
Three is exactly right. So there's only two difference there. The biggest difference in red zone production from 22 to 24 is just pure rushing touchdowns. Tennessee had 35 rushing touchdowns in 22. In 24, they had 25. Against Power 5 teams in 2022, Tennessee was 36 of 48 in the red zone. 36 touchdowns. These are touchdowns. They scored 36 touchdowns in 48 trips in 2022. That's 75%. This past season in 24 against Power 4 group, Power 4 or 5, what we're calling it now, Tennessee was 20 of 40, just 50% in terms of touchdowns in the red zone. That's where it's got to get better. And where they were missing out was really the rushing stuff because in 22 they had 18 passing touchdowns in the red zone. They had 14 passing touchdowns in the red zone in 2024. So you got to be better and you got to be more productive scoring touchdowns against good opponents.
The last part of his question, Austin, could Nico running be more of an option? Like, again, we talked about this several times. But I mean, look at Nico in the Citrus Bowl. Look at Nico against Ohio State. I know running for his life was part of it, but there were some designed runs for your quarterback. As, sure. You know, he scored a touchdown on a designed run. Like, you don't want him to take unnecessary hits, but he doesn't have to be a straight dual threat. But, I mean, they got to run him a little bit because he's good at it. And I think it helps him, and I think it helps this offense. So in the red zone or third down or fourth down, I mean, see, watch the college football playoffs. Will Howard's done it, and you know some of these NFL quarterbacks are doing it. I just think they need to have some design runs for him, in my opinion, moving forward. I understand he's your quarterback, but go win some football games.
Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree with you. And, you know, for Nico, I think, you know, another year in the offseason to get bigger, I think that helps just to put on 10 more pounds, especially around the midsection, that type of stuff, to be able to handle big hits. I think all that helps. I mean, Nico, again, it's just kind of he's crafty in his ability to run, right? He's kind of got those crazy legs when he gets going out there, and, you know, he can make things happen. It's not like, you know, he's not Michael Vick or Lamar Jackson. He's not Josh Dobbs, but, you know, he's capable. And, you know, I think – when, you know, the numbers that Hubs just read off, I mean, just really drives home the point of, like, again, you're comparing to 22. The biggest thing for fans is, I mean, it was like routes on air in 22. I mean, even when Tennessee scores those 14 passing touchdowns, you're fitting them into tight windows. You're not hitting them wide open like you were. I mean, every week it was a wide open touchdown against Kentucky and Bama and Missouri and so on and so forth, South Carolina, you know, this year, and you know, even with Joe, like, they've had to, you know, be a little bit more precise, you know, when it comes to that stuff. So I think that, you know, Nico's ability to run definitely can help. I wonder too, a year further in the system. They're a little deeper at the position with Merklinger and now George. Do they feel the freedom to do more run than they did this past year? I think they called it this past year, one, to help protect Nico, two, and also to protect the offense. It just seemed like they were more hesitant on that type of stuff.
Well, I think you have to do. I think you have to look at Nico Grant like you did Hendon in 22. In big games, critical situations, you turn him loose and let him run. You don't need to run him against teams that, you know. I mean, I haven't looked up Hendon's numbers every game, but he probably didn't run it a lot against Vanderbilt. You know,
or he ran a speed option and almost got hurt against Akron on the goal line. Which
I understand that. Well, they also threw to Cedric Tillman and got him hurt against Akron, trying to get 100 yards receiving in the second quarter when they're up 5 touchdowns. So, I mean, yeah, Everybody makes mistakes along the way. My point being that they tried to limit Hendon as the season went along outside of just big games. He ran it in the Florida game because they needed him to, right? He ran it some against Alabama because they needed him to. I think you have to be smart about that. But when you go back to the red zone, for me, Grant, it's about creativity. Everybody in every league of football struggles to score in the red zone. It's hard. In the NFL, watch it every Sunday. It's hard. You're going to have to be more creative with red zone stuff, I think, than just saying, hey, our guy's just going to beat you one-on-one out there, because you're not getting a ton of that stuff.
And who's the hardest player on the field to account for? A quarterback leaking out of the backfield and doing something with it. I mean, that's always in the run game, using legs, quarterback's the hardest one to account for, especially in the red zone. The field shrinks and everything gets smaller. At some point, you just got to be a little bit more creative, a little bit more, I don't know, a gamer in that situation, and find ways to get it done like y'all are talking about.
Panic Vol, why isn't there any more talk about portal defensive tackle? We just lost three, and while Eason Moy and Hobbs are a solid trio, behind them are a bunch of unproven question marks with Wallace Robinson and some freshmen. Are West and or Bailey going to get looks for depth inside?
I do think that like a Dom Bailey can slide inside. So, yeah, I do think that there's some movement around.
Nashville 615, where could the SAS portal strategy have been better? Seems like we balked at price of some guys early on, not understanding the price of the portal went up across the board.
Hey, Pete, you want to start, or you want me to start on that one?
Go ahead.
Well, I mean, I think that you're making decisions, and your decisions are where are you investing your money? Are you investing in roster retention, you know, because there's players that you want back, and it costed money to get those guys back? Or, you know, where's your budget at from what you spent on your recruiting class that you put together? And then go from there. Yeah, I mean, it is more expensive, and everybody knew it was going to be more expensive. Was it more than some teams probably thought it was going to be? Yeah, I mean, there probably was some sticker shock with some of the portal stuff out there. But there was also sticker shock in what it was going to take to retain what you had. So, I mean, I just think that's part of it. I don't. You know, I mean, you could have gone heavier in the portal, but there would have been some guys that fans really believe in that are important in this program that wouldn't have been back. And so that's the decision you have to make. Are you going to go young players of your recruiting class and roster retention? Are you going to let a bunch of good, you know, you're going to let some good players walk and go in the portal and get some guys? That's kind of the decision that was made, not just at Tennessee, but I think around the country you're seeing that.
Yeah, you know, SEC Mike had a nice retort to a poll that was on Twitter. I'll read it here. It's a mistake to make definitive statements in such a fluid landscape. The portal is mostly about money. With rev share coming, everyone now has money to spend. And that's important to note because, you know, it's easier for Virginia Tech or Georgia Tech or Purdue or some of these schools that are a little bit lower than your LSUs, Auburns, Floridas, those type of teams to keep their players, to be able to bring in players that maybe aren't playing at LSU, Auburn, or Florida, and they want to go play somewhere. There are also very few elite players in the portal this cycle. I agree with that. I mean, there's been a few good ones, but I mean, then you got everybody in the country trying to, recruit these, handful of guys. Most money goes to retention of your roster, which goes to Hubs's point. To land transfers this cycle, you have to overspend on lesser talent. Now, is that smart? I don't know. I mean, again, time will tell. Tennessee's got to be, if they're not going to, quote, overspend for lesser talent, then they've got to take the younger talent that they do have and get it to the field. So, it's rubber meets the road. We'll see which one plays out. And again, I still think they're going to add people from the portal to this football team.
Is there a lack of competition within the program right now? You're paying a number of guys big NIL. that will walk in and know they are starting at wide receiver, O-line, linebacker? Is there any sense of urgency in position battles?
Well, you hope you hope that you're paying the right people, you know, and you're hoping you're paying people that are driven to be better, with the understanding, Grant, that there's more money for them on the other side of this thing if they do what they need to do in college. What you're hoping is that you're hoping somebody who's making money doesn't become satisfied and think that they've made it. And we see that in the NFL free agency, right? How many guys have gone and taken a big deal, Grant, and not been very good?
It's not the first contract in the NFL. It's the second contract. Right. And it's the same thing here. It's not the first NIL deal. It's not the first paycheck you start getting as a college athlete. There's a lot more on the table, both in the here and now and your future. I mean, you're competing against yourself to get to the next level and to continue those paydays. And I think if you don't have competition in your program, you're failing as a head coach. Like, even if you do have established starters, I mean, these guys compete. You have depth. You better have competitors on this roster, or you're failing, because nobody's more competitive than college football coaches. And if that doesn't trickle down to your roster, then you got problems.
A lot of position groups are rotation. So, like, I think we get so hung up on starter. Defensive linemen, like, sure, there are four guys who are out there first. There are 12 guys who play, and they play a lot of snaps. Like, we get so hung up on starter on the defensive line. And linebacker, too, Arian Carter played the most snaps. Jalen Smith and Jeremiah Tealander played the same amount of snaps the last couple games of the year. Like, if you're a part of that four-man rotation, you're going to play. Corner, you got two guys, you play a third. Safety, there's a four-man rotation. So, like, I mean, yeah, like, there better be some competition in there, because not only are you competing for a starting job, but a spot in the rotation to get on the football field.
Well, remember this, too. Even pre-NIL, if a guy was coming back as an established starter, he was coming back to being a starter, right? I mean, Ricky Gibson's a starter at corner because of what he proved, not because of his big NIL deal, you know, or whatever his NIL numbers are, or whatever. Boo Carter's the same. I mean, Boo Carter proved that he could play, you know. So, I mean, yeah, I think there's competition. I think there's always going to be competition. But, I mean, you can go back and look. They're established players weren't going to lose their job. I mean, Zakai Ziegler's not losing his job at point guard. And it has nothing to do with what his NIL number looks like or competition. He's their point guard. He's the established guy there. You have some of that going on as well. I think where he's probably getting at is, what's your competition level if you're just handing a job to a freshman because you paid him so much money?
Yeah, and I get that.
And that's going to happen. Yep. You hope that freshman has all the mental makeup that you're looking for, Grant, to be driven to be a really good player. Because if you're paying big money for a guy coming out of high school, he's got to play.
It's not the first contract. It's the second contract.
Exactly.
Lutes James Pierce, can we potentially get better edge production from a combo of Joshua Josephs, Caleb Herring, and Jordan Ross?
To me, this question is, can Tennessee basketball's offense be better without Dalton Knecht? Like, it's hard to imagine, but they can still be very good and very productive. Like, these, you'd rather have James Pierce than not have James Pierce, but I like Josh Josephs. I think these guys can be productive and play well on the defensive front.
I think it boils down to, what kind of step does Caleb Herring make? And what is Jordan Ross? We've not seen Jordan Ross. Like, you know, so I'm a little bit on the punt block early in the year, and you obviously see the athleticism, but what is he? And if he is kind of who they hope that he is, then yeah, you know, because I think, you know, Josh Josephs is that grizzled veteran in the room that's gotten better each and every year. And if Jordan Ross comes on and, let's say, you know, has a James Pierce type sophomore year, then all of a sudden that's pretty good.
The sacks and TFLs were down a little bit for Pierce this year, obviously, but the quarterback hurries, one of the best guys in college football, pressuring the quarterback. I mean, they were like 45 on the year or something. It's one of the, you know, nation's best.
You know he's coming back. He hadn't declared for the draft.
Stop. Yeah. He and Brew McCoy are going to room together for their extra year.
Brew's coming back.
Come on.
I like Joshua Josephs a lot. I think he's going to be – he was taking on the team in TFL. I think he's going to be a really good player, obviously. A couple more. Let's go to that Vol guy. We'll do two more, one baseball and one basketball. That Vol guy, how do y'all feel about the baseballs being in the top five of the preseason polls we've seen so far? Justified, or does that feel a little bit premature? I think it's very justified. I mean, obviously you won the national championship, but look at what Tony's done year after year after losing a lot of guys. Look at the recruiting classes he's done. look at the guys he's brought in from the transfer portal. Also look at all the returning production you have back in this lineup. I understand there's a lot of changes on the mound, and you know there's a lot of arms. You just got to figure out who they are and kind of what role they're going to fit. But I think top five is very, very justified. I don't think it's premature whatsoever. We'll go to wrong-handed. Why do you think the Vols don't shoot the corner three much? Do you think Coach Barnes believes his offensive philosophy is good enough to win it all, Grant?
I don't know what the numbers are on the corner three and how they compare to other teams in the country, to be honest. Offensively, I don't know why Rick Barnes would run an offense or have an offensive philosophy that he, if he didn't think it was good enough to win it all, why he would use it. I mean, that he's not here to just play defense and hope it works out. I mean, he's here to try to win basketball. At the same time, they have a pretty big hurdle in front of them to cross before they win it all, which is to make a Final Four. And if you get there, to get to Monday night, I mean, that's a few steps down the road. But I do think, I mean, you can go back. There's you usually have to be really, really good offensively to win a title. But, I mean, there are exceptions to the rule. UConn went on a run 2014. I think they were like 40th best offensively in the country that year. I think they won in the 60s in the Elite Eight, scoring in the 60s in the Final Four in the championship game. So it can happen. It's possible.
Virginia a couple years ago.
Well, they play slow, but they're very highly rated offensively they are efficient, or they were, that team was specifically. But, I mean, what makes you believe in Rick is they've had a top five defense for the last 5 years, it feels like. I think 4 or 5 years they've been top five, top three, number one time in there. So they're going to have that defense to lean on. Like, they didn't fail to reach the Final Four last year because of offense. They failed because the other team had Zach Edey and Tennessee didn't. Like, that's what they couldn't get past. Like, the offense is not the biggest issue.
If you go back to my Ball Club Confidential episode with Zakai Ziegler, he talks about not liking to shoot the corner three. It's his least favorite shot on the floor, which is ironic because he made that one the other night. But, you know, there's very few Bruce Bowens over there just camped out in the corner ready to hit that corner three. Or to put it in those late 90s, early 2000s, actually just late 90s, Upper East Tennessee, those Ryan Lawson teams at Cherokee Grant, the Sandy Jackson out in the corner making those threes.
Sandy Jackson. The Grant Williams, I mean, Grant Williams is an NBA player, camped out in the corner.
Yep.
His entire career. Yeah, he's up, not right now because he's out, but, I mean, he's made a career out of camping out in the corner. I don't hate the corner three. I got to disagree with Zakai there. I would like it a lot more than Zakai does.
Exterior Home Solutions, for a free estimate, you can pick up the phone today and dial 865-524-5888. They're local and trusted since 1999. East Tennessee's number one source for siding, windows, roofing, garage. You can contact, again, Exterior Home Solutions today by dialing that phone number or going online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. For Grant Ramey, Austin Price, Brent Hubbs, I'm Eric Kane. Got a lot going on over at VolQuest.com right now. Plenty of recruiting notes. A big weekend coming up. Anything else in the transfer portal? Basketball is moving right now. Baseball is less than a month away. All that and more. It's over on the General's Quarters and at VolQuest.com. Appreciate you guys for sending in questions. We'll do it again next week. This is the VolQuest Mailbag Podcast.
You've been listening to the VolQuest Mailbag Podcast every week right here on VolQuest.